Welcome to the Gamesmith's Table Talk. This is a roundtable format discussion where I and my guests try to cover three tabletop role-playing related topics in 15 minutes. If you know anything about tabletop role players, then you'll know that this is an ambitious goal. Let's head to the table. Welcome back to our Table Talk podcast. I'm your host, Clayton the Gamesmith, and joining me are...
I'm Franklin.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Clark.
Let's head to the table.
The views and opinions of the panel are their own and do not reflect the views and opinions of any other individual company or organization. This podcast has been known to be opinionated. You have been warned.
Welcome to our next episode in our podcast, where we are going to be attempting to get through three topics in 15 minutes. We unsuccessfully did that in our previous episode, where we were talking about playstyle, and we're going to finish off that topic, perhaps, right now.
Well, we ended talking about the general playstyle of the table, so perhaps we should go into the individual playstyles.
Yeah, maybe just talk in a little bit more detail about you know, experiences. I mentioned way back at the start in our little introduction that I am also a very avid video gamer, and a lot of my opinions on this are going to be connected to that side of gaming as well as the tabletop side of things. Fundamentally, any game, you're creating an experience, and there's no such thing as one experience being objectively better or worse than another. There are experiences that you enjoy, there are experiences that move you, there are experiences that you feel improve you as a person, perhaps. But you have to be very careful that you're creating the kind of experience that you set out to create, and you have to understand how different play styles work towards those different kinds of experiences. We've talked at length about the power fantasy at this point. Something that is usually quite incompatible with the power fantasy is horror. Horror comes from a lack of control, a lack of understanding of what's happening around you, and so it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to feel powerful and afraid at the same time. The only time we really see that is when characters who used to think of themselves as very powerful suddenly come up against something much, much bigger than them.
Definitely, horror is a difficult one to do because your players do have to buy into the fact that they are vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely. And horror is probably the hardest thing to do in a tabletop game.
I completely reject that. I can't believe I'm saying that. I completely reject that. The difference between playing Call of Cthulhu, where you are absolutely powerless, but you know that going into the game, that the person who goes insane last wins.
Yeah.
You know what the outcome is before the game even starts. So that, to me, that's not disempowering. If I play a game like Vampire the Masquerade, I feel completely empowered by that because I'm part of the group that the game is designed for.
Yes, we're talking more of a general horror type game where it's about discovering the horror. The horror that you're going up against is not something that you control.
Yeah, to actually create fear in the player sitting around the table is very difficult and something you have to be very careful about as a GM or as administrator as well.
Okay, so if you're talking about what would be an example, are you talking like an AP from Pathfinder, for example? Because there are a few horror genre APs.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think the horror AP that Pathfinder put out, the Carrion Crown from many, many years ago. I really like Carrion Crown as six standalone adventures. I don't know how good of a horror adventure it is. I would look, actually, the better experience I've had in Pathfinder is with I don't know if it was a free RPG Day module or something. It was a module they did quite a while ago called Hangman's Noose. That's, I think, the much better, partially because it is a one-shot. That changes the tone of the adventure quite a bit. It's meant to be played through in two or three sessions, and it has a lot of elements that I think make it a much better horror adventure.
And we apparently have gotten off into the horror genre, which is not really what we wanted to do. We'll just cap that one off by saying player agency and buy-in is huge around the table. It ties into everything that you do.
Yeah, and this is a big part of the difficulty of horror and role-playing as well. Unfortunately, drag things back a little bit. To be a player in the game, you have to have agency. Otherwise, you're just sitting at a table and someone is narrating at you.
Yes.
Yes.
So you have to be very careful.
That is the cardinal sin of GMs.
Yes, absolutely. As a GM, you should be trying the best you can to give your players as much agency as is reasonable for the game world.
Yes.
Obviously, you're not going to be playing, you know, a traditional medieval knights and zero magic setting and suddenly someone can have a jetpack. That's ridiculous. But giving the players the agency to explore the world as they see fit and to play the characters that they want to play is something we should try for. So it then becomes very difficult when you have a horror game that, in essence, you need to take agency away from the player. You have to present them with something that they cannot fight, that they can barely hope to survive against. And it's something that's very difficult.
All right, let's move over into some of the other concepts that are individual or perceived as individual, like the hack and slasher, which is a playstyle. That's basically when really the only thing that this person is looking for is the next fight.
Are you making murder hobo and hack and slasher the same thing? Because I would make them different things.
Okay, what would be your definition of the hack and slasher? Mine is he's just looking for the next fight. It doesn't matter if everybody lives in the fight or everybody dies in the fight. It's just the next fight.
See, and I would define that as a murder hobo.
I would define a murder hobo as, you know, somebody that has to kill everything.
Yes, because, you know, a lot of people just are, you know, delicate flowers when they're hacked and slashed.
My definition of the hack and slasher, though, is just somebody who's looking for the next fight.
Okay.
Where they have to be rolling the dice, they have to be, you know, doing that.
I see. Murder hobo is kind of a new term to me, but the hack and slash playstyle goes back right to the very roots of tabletop gaming.
Well, it would come from tabletop war games, the ancestors of more modern day games like Iron Kingdoms or Warhammer is the big one, where it's all about the tactical side of things.
And I very much see that as a playstyle, like in early modules of the game where, you know, character A walks into room 3 and there's a different hack and slash
encounter
to face,
yeah,
where there's, you know, low role playing but, you know, mostly your tactical combat.
And I have focused something game. I do have to know, and something that's changed a lot in role playing games they go is changing the design and the mechanics of the game to incentivize different playstyles, yes, something we may touch on.
Have you ever noticed later that, you know, in back in the day when you're like walking through a dungeon or through a dungeon crawl that there are two rooms that are beside one another. When you murder and kill everything in one room, nobody in the next room hears it.
This is true. I think another defining definition between the difference between a hack and slash and a kill hobo is a kill hobo will kill innocents. Like, they'll walk into town and for no other reason kill the bartender.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Where your hack and slash just doesn't do that. They're looking for the next fight. But it's not like, let's murder everybody in the town.
I think in that circumstance, then you have a... What you're describing there in your kill hobo is a character who... A player who isn't invested in the game world yet. They aren't invested in their character as an ND. They haven't quite realized... Actually, this I see a lot, having run with newer and especially younger players. Coming from video games to role-playing games is a different style. And importantly, there are consequences in role-playing games in the way that video game designers can't really put in. If your experience in role-playing games is coming from games like Skyrim or Fable, you have options like you can just reload the save, or there are certain contrivances that are necessary for the platform they're developing for. And these players then tend to get kind of a shock the first time they play a tabletop role-playing game when it's a different style of adventure. It came to mind because it's something I've seen a number of new players. It's a behavior I see quite commonly in new players.
Which was very obvious and symptomatic of 4th edition D&D. Was very much evident and very geared towards that console or computer or PC gamer. Which is a personal pet peeve of mine, that as a tabletop player for the last, you know, hopefully decades, I am so cheesed that the term gamer has been hijacked by people who play platforms or PCs, and they're defined as gamers now, not tabletop gamers. They're separate people. That just cheeses me, because we, in my opinion, the only reason why console games and PC games exist is because of tabletop gamers who wanted to transfer their experience to an electronic environment.
Speaking as the young person at the table, so what you're saying is console gamers should stop having fun the wrong way?
Yes!
I've noticed this too, that a lot of people in the video game generation don't even credit the tabletop gaming industry as the grandfather of that medium. But much to the credit of game tabletop gaming evolution over the last 40-some-odd years, there's definitely been more of a focus within the rules to role-play more. There's built right into the rule systems, there's incentives to do more role-playing rather than the combat mechanics.
Are you talking about electronic gamings or tabletop gamings?
Tabletop gamings.
Well, and this is touching on something actually that I was building to earlier and I didn't quite get to my point. Something I do know is that in early editions of D&D, experience was from kills only.
Yes.
And in some cases, the player who got the kill got the XP.
Yes.
Whereas more modern games, like Pathfinder First Edition, Paizo will very commonly have experience points for talking your way past an encounter, for coming up with unique problems. And it's usually literally the same amount of XP. If you talk your way past someone, you usually get the same amount of XP as if you'd fought them.
I will, and as a person who went through that evolution, and I always felt, you know, no one in First Edition would ever play a wizard. Because you never get any XP because, you know, the fighter goes and hacks through everything and they get all the XP. And they also had one of the lower XP chains that you had to go through in order to get to level up. So whoever delivered the proverbial kill steal got the XP.
Yes.
Now, after that experience and the Palladium RPG came out, their XP chart specifically said, you get XP awards for not killing, for coming up with an idea, for using a skill check, you got XP amount whatever if you were successful, and half that amount if you failed. So it was goal-oriented and not necessarily death-oriented.
Yes, and once again, we seem to have gotten way off topic.
At the risk of adding another topic, and I think we'll leave this as a topic for a future episode, but we're even starting to see an additional jump to milestone-based systems.
Yes.
Or hybridizing the two, where I've seen some games where XP is strictly, you get one XP per session, and you level up when you reach a certain number of sessions played on the character.
So what I'm getting from all this is that there's, in the gaming industry, there's a movement to move players away from the kill hobo and hack and slash mentality.
I think in tabletop role-playing games, I would agree. I think that's because the niche of tabletop, or the kill hobo and the hack and slash, is being taken up by role-playing games like Warhammer, because that's the entire thing. They're meant to deliver exactly that fantasy. So tabletop games are moving into other genres. And kind of like I said at the start, and I imagine everyone else agrees with me, there isn't a right way or a wrong way to have fun. It's about finding a game that suits the play style that you want to play.
But I would definitely agree that there's more of a focus on the role-playing aspect of role-playing games since the influx of the video game generation.
Absolutely. And once again, we seem to be running out of... Oh, we still got 2 minutes?
We got 2 minutes.
Wow. Okay. I don't know if we have enough time, though, to get into another topic.
No.
No.
So finish this one.
I think we have... I think... I'll just say this. I find it's usually younger players who are just getting... or people who are just getting into the hobby that fall into either the kill hobo or the hack and slash mentality.
And is that because you think of what like Clark was talking about, where it's because of the video game influence?
A lot of that, yes. And it's easier to... you got all these mechanics on your character sheet, so it's easier to move in that direction.
Well, I would certainly invite anybody, any of our listeners, to comment on this, particularly, you know, if you want to comment on this and let us know what your particular feelings and your age group is on the influence of electronic games on tabletop games, I'd be very much interested in reading about that.
But once again, we're running out of time, so...
We are.
We'll see you next episode.
We did not get through...
No.
3 topics in 15 minutes.
I think we still have some.
Still haven't got through 3 topics overall, so...
Until next time.
We'll see you at the table.